To the honourable members, officials of this institution, I suggest that we get started with the meeting, please. I would request that we bow our heads in prayer. Amen. Let me take this opportunity on behalf of the Select Committee on Education and Recreation welcome the officials from NSFAS and also appreciate the fact that I can see that almost all the members of the committee are here. You were invited to come to this meeting a while ago. I want to believe that we are going to have a fruitful engagement with you on this very important issue, the funding for students to proceed with their education in the various fields of study. However, I do want to, even before we introduce ourselves, to express my disquiet about the late receipt of your presentation. I did get an apology through the committee secretary that you apologize profusely for the late submission of that presentation. We understand that, but it puts us in a very awkward position as members. We can't read and be able to analyze your presentation and prepare engagement and questions and comments that you want to make with you. So I would really plead very strongly that next time you are invited for a similar purpose, you give us your documents in good time so that you can do justice to the work. The reason why you are invited for a presentation is not just to present and go, but we want to engage you in such a manner that we get to know your challenges, we get to know your strong points, so that we know we've got answers. We are elected representatives. We need to have answers when people ask questions about the fund. So we need to give ourselves time to engage fruitfully with the sector that we're representing. Having said that, let me take this opportunity then to introduce myself. I am Honorable Lungelwa Linette Zwane, the chairperson of the Education and Recreation Select Committee. I would request members to introduce themselves going that way.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I am TK Mampuru, the committee whip. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Manana Kleike, the member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Pindu Sam Kamgugu, the member of the committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dikhang Stok. I'm also a member of the committee. Thanks.
Morning. My name is Mtomuhle Khaula, a member of the committee. Thanks.
Good morning, all. My name is Tanlim Pambo Sibukwana, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Jacques Julius, a non-member of the the committee, just sitting in today. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Lamini, member of the committee.
Morning. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
We'll hand over to the officials of NSFAS to introduce.
I'm Richard McKinnon-Little, the Technical Project Manager from NSFAS.
Good morning. My name is Msulwa Daga, the CEO of NSFAS.
My name is Zamayeto. My surname is Soka Ise. I'm the Chair of the Board of NSFAS.
Good morning, members. My name is Paul Whittle. I'm from the Department of Higher Education and Training. Good morning. My name is Connie Kambago from the Department of Higher Education and Training under the National Skills Fund. Thank you.
Good morning, members and the department. Linda Stokely is my name, a researcher for the committee.
Very good morning. My name is Temba Mteto, a candidate advisor for the committee.
Morning, I am Pilot Gwebo. I'm from committee section.
Good morning. My name is Pomola Sukhobela from the Office of the Director General, Department of Higher Education.
Good morning. I'm Makaziwe Mlandu, Secretary to the Free State Chief.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Mwewa Chola. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
You are sitting at the far back. You could actually occupy the seats closer to the rest of the meeting, if you don't mind. No, thank you very much. At least you have been able to attach a name to a face. I do want also to acknowledge the fact that I'm very sad as I give you the way
to believe in the process, you know. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to all honorable members of this select committee on education and recreation. We also appreciate the fact that you invited us to brief you on new student-centered model, as well as the regional and institutions to roll over the work, the transformation that we do at NSFAS. But before I say anything, Chairperson, I want to apologize for this late coming of the presentation. We would like to engage with members to something that you know beforehand. It was not the plan of this organization to have that. It will never happen, because I'm saying this because I'm the chair, I'm coming outside the management structure. I'm doing an oversight in this institution. So we'll make it a point that we don't disadvantage the members by providing you a presentation very late. We don't want to say any excuses, we just want to apologize. Having said so, I want to draw your attention to the screen, honorable members, and say to you that what you see at the top of the screen, top left of the screen, is not a new logo of NSFAS, but it's a history of NSFAS in terms of numbers. Since 1991 up to 2012, this scheme started with 7,220 students funded. But the reason why we put that in 2012, we hit a milestone of 1 million students being funded in 2012. So meaning therefore today we're already funded more than 1 million students as NSFAS. We are going to take you through to the mandate of NSFAS. And we are also going to respond to your question, Chairperson, in terms of the student-centered model. And we felt that we must give you details in 2014 loans and bursaries. What is the situation out there in terms of the universities and the colleges that we deal with? And we are also going to outline the issues we have in terms of allocation and demand. And I like in your introduction, you started with those issues. So it's a fertile ground for us to respond to the issues that you have just raised. In terms of our mandate, and I know that the members are aware of the fact that the National Student Financial Aid Scheme is a public entity, and we are reporting to the Department of Higher Education and Training. That is why we have this support this morning. And whatever we do, we are governed by the NSFAS Act 6 of 1999. Let me say upfront that though I've stated the numbers, but up to date, over the years, we've disbursed more than 41.5 billion in loans and bursaries to up to 1.4 million students. Let me come down and make just a breakdown to say that in 2013, just 2013 alone, we disbursed 8.7 billion to 416,174 students. And at that time, in 2013, we're still having 23 public universities, which the number has increased now with the Sol Plaatje University and the University of Mpumalanga, as well as the Sifako Magatsa that has been established. So three universities are getting in terms of 2014 in the funding of NESWA. We also fund the 50 public technical and vocational education and training, the TVET colleges, throughout the country. In 2012, NESPA dispersed 7.7 billion to 383,000 students. The reason why I'm highlighting this upfront is to compare this 2013 and 2012. In fact, it has been the trend, except that in starting in 1991, there were ups and downs. But now we seem to be moving up. In terms of the numbers are increasing. The money is increasing very little compared to the numbers, the demand that we're going to outline going forward. But having said so, Chairperson, I think as the board and playing oversight in this important organization of our country, we have a transformation program that we call the student-centered model. The Minister of Higher Education and Training demanded that he would like to see a product where money follows students. The members will remember that there was a report in 2009, which is called the Ministerial Review Report. It is there in the NESPAS website, which reported on the challenges of NESPAS and the way forward. And one of the things that we identified was that earlier, NESPAS never focused in terms of this mandate, which is these functions. That is why, time and again, with the key stakeholders like Parliament, we want always to remind ourselves. We have not come up with anything new except to say that we focus on this function, and as the board, we play an oversight in terms of making sure that this organization develops criteria and conditions for the granting of loans and bursaries to eligible students, and you may call it deserving students, in consultation with the Minister, and we do that time and again with the Department of Education. Chairperson, you have already highlighted the issue of fundraising. We also fundraise, and we are going to outline that in terms of what we fundraise. It may not be enough, but we also perform that particular function as NESPA. We allocate funds for loans and bursaries to eligible students. Those are the two products that we do. Loans and bursaries. Of course, the loans of NESPAS are better than any other loans that you can find out there, which are provided by the other private schemes, because it is government. We also recover these loans. We make sure that we recover these loans. We maintain and analyze the database and undertake research for the better utilization of the financial resources. And we also advise the minister on matters relating to the financial aid. But emphatically, we don't want to exceed our mandate. But time and again, we engage with the minister in terms of making sure that we perform this duty very well. In finishing my introduction, I want to say that you spoke about change, Chairperson. Change is not always good. Because of this transformation, and we're talking about money follow students, and before, NESPAS used to disperse this money to the institutions, and thereafter the institutions identified the deserving students. But now our transformation is saying that we must go straight to the students. and will are going to outline to you how this change affects us and our stakeholders. But we believe that at the end of the day, we'll be able to remove and close the leak by so doing. And I'm going to hand over to the executive office of NSFAS to get into the detailed issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning again, honorable members. I'm going to start talking about what the Chairperson has just spoken about, just the transformation program. And this is probably is going to be one topic that we speak to you for the next 4 or 5 years, because this is the future of NSFAS, this is the direction that we're taking as an institution, and it's important. We're spending a lot of time on it today just to lay the background so that when we have conversations in the future, we have already spoken to the committee about this transformation program. To reiterate the numbers that the Chairperson has already spoken about, 441 million rand was dispersed in 1999, and 1999 is the year that the NSFAS Act was passed. That's the year that TEFSA changed to NSFAS. That's the official start of NSFAS as a government scheme. And 441 million rand was dispersed that year. Was moved from there to 8.7 billion rand in 2013. Providing financial aid to university and TVET college students, and just in the life of the last parliament, the fourth parliament, we started in 2009, at 3.1 billion, funding 191,000 students, and we've moved the institution to 8.7 billion, funding 416,000 students in 2013, and this has been a significant increase, and I think the government has done a lot in the last 5 years to ensure that more students continue to be funded by the scheme. In a period of 5 years, numbers have moved from 191,000 students funded to 416,000 students, and that's substantial. Part of the reason that we had to change was the structures that NSFAS had, policies, systems, did not keep pace with this growth. Because on the side, funding was growing, number of students were growing, but NSFAS still maintained the old systems and the old structures. And the Auditor General issued a disclaimer to NSFAS in 2010. That was probably the lowest point in the institution for the Auditor General to say, look, you don't have the right system to manage the amount of money that you have. And therefore, things had to change from that point. The institution central system that NSFAS uses allocates funding to universities using a full cost of study and rates to determine financial needs, which skews sometimes allocations in favor of historical advantage institutions. And the point that we make there is because we have got this formula that allocates money to each university, and it uses race. There is anecdotal evidence that even if you look at black students for instance, certain universities attract black students that come from better off families than other universities. Therefore, if you are only using race as a way to allocate funding, you find that the historically disadvantaged universities continue to be disadvantaged by the system. And therefore, we had to change that system to make sure that we have a much better system that just looks at the condition of the student, not the condition of the institution. Also, the applications were done through financial aid offices, and they were not controlled by NSFAS. Then for the process developed over time, because remember, this is the process that was developed for TEFSA, and as the funding was growing, you know, this process was never changed, and it became flawed over time, because now it had to manage more money, more students, but it was a process that was designed for 10,000 students way back, and therefore it had to change. What therefore happens with this system is that requires ad hoc adjustments. For instance, we pay institutions 30% upfront payments at the beginning of the year. It helps, these upfront payments help in a way, because Because the government financial year starts in April, money from government only arrives from April 1-1. But students are at varsity or at college in January, and they need to have books in January, they need to have food in January. Therefore, what we do as an institution, we provide upfront payments to those institutions so that students can be given allowances, they can be put in residences, before even we get the tranche of money from the system. But also the problem of the old system was students were sending choose to apply in some instances for days, and before they would get feedback, it would take them a long time. And funding was provided for 1 year of, at a time. Therefore, students had to apply every year, even if a student is a good student that continues to pass. They had to go to the financial aid office and apply every year. And, you know, the system developed bad tendencies, fraud and corruption. There was affidavits that were used. You know, your students were required in that system to sign up affidavits. And, you know, with these affidavits, what they then developed over time is they would start killing their parents through these affidavits. That when they know that their parents are earning enough money, they will say, no, yeah, sign an affidavit that my father is passed away. You know, and therefore these affidavits became a homicide. These affidavits became a homicide activity for parents that are earning enough money. And therefore we had to think about what we're going to do going forward as networks. How we transform this institution to be able to better manage funding. Inefficiencies also occurred in the system. Overclaiming, underclaiming, late claiming. What happens is the system relies on the universities to submit claims to NSFAS and NSFAS will pay. If, for instance, the university claims late, it means that there might be students that are suffering at the campus because NSFAS has not received those applications or those applicant forms to be able to pay up for those students. And some universities submitted inadequate documentation, which therefore meant that there is a back and forth between the university and NSFAS, and the students suffer during the course of that back and forth. And there was contravention of allowance terms and conditions. What also was the result of this, NSFAS never had a direct relationship with students until they exited the system. How NSFAS and NSFAS operated the way TEFSA used to operate, that you get funded at a financial aid office in an institution. By the time you start working, you hear a guy saying, no, I'm the one that gave you money. And some students didn't even know who are you because they thought that the money was coming from the university because that relationship never existed between an NSFAS and the student. And the old system also failed in managing information and reporting. And I think the Auditor General was very skeptical in attacking how the system failed to account for the money that was NSFAS. Despite this growth in funds, I think one thing that should be said is there's still a demand that is far exceeding the supply of academic demand. And therefore the universities over time they developed certain schemes. One of the schemes what we call top slicing, where the universities would say because they have got 300 million, but when they look at the students that they have applied, they need about 500 million. And then when they decide, instead of giving students, let's say 50,000 so that they can pay for tuition, accommodation, books, they will then decide and top slice and say everyone is going to get $19,000 so that they can fund more students. Of course, on the other side, it helps because more students get funded. But on the other side, if a student needed 60,000 to continue and stay on campus and you give them 19,000, you might as well throw the 19,000 rand away because that student's going to fail anyway because they don't have books. The 19,000 might only be enough to cover tuition. And that's the problem of the system that we had to get over. I'm going to give Richard to just delve into a more detail in terms of how the student standard model was constructed.
Thanks very much, Executive Officer Shepherd. Members of the committee. What I want to do now is just give a painted picture of what this new model looks like. So we've talked about ministerial review as the background to it, which sets the direction to a student-centered model, where the students are the center of everything. You've heard from the executive officer some of the problems that we're inheriting, the old way of doing things, the TEPS way of doing things, which then evolved. And through the ministerial review, the board took a decision in 2012 to go ahead and implement a new student-centered model. And the intention there was to carry through the recommendations, or some of the recommendations of the ministerial review, and to embody that in a new system that would then be meet the requirements of being student-centered. And the student-centered system was built around a few guiding principles. The first guiding principle being that funding is provided for a qualification, not for a single year of study at a time. And you know, the important point there is that the student then only has to apply once. We only have to go through the means test once. We've made the decision that it's unlikely that a person's circumstances will change so significantly through a period of study that we should be doing the means test every year. And so what we'll do is we'll then take a student in based on the means test and based on their academic results, and we'll effectively continue those students through the course of study, providing, of course, that they meet academic criteria to be readmitted to the institution in the following year. So the intent is that a student applies once and then carries through the system until completion. That takes a massive amount of workload out of the system, both from the institution's perspective, from the student's perspective, and from NSFAS's perspective in administering that. So we're reducing the costs of administering these loans to make our time more available. The second is that the financial means test is automated and linked to other government databases to verify personal, family income, and employment data. So in this case, and I'll show you a little bit later in the model, we were able to then link through to the Department of Home Affairs. So exactly the issue that the executive officer was raising, we can now go and verify that a student's parents are in fact still alive. We can see in terms of the Act, we have a link through to SARS as well to see if a student is employed or not, so that we can then validate some of the financial information. And we've also taken a view that in terms of the means test, we will use proxy measures to substitute for the full means test. So, for example, we may look at whether the student is a recipient of a SATA grant or with what quintile school the recipient attended, and on that basis, waive the means test. So to try and make it a lot simpler for students to enter the system. What we found is it's actually quite challenging for a student to, certainly in a rural area, to complete the application form, get the information in terms of family income, get all that information to NSFAS. So there's quite a challenge in terms of getting that through, so we want to try and minimize that workload on the students. The third area is that the tuition and residence fees continue to be paid to the university or college. So we're not directing the money now to the students in terms of the student-centered model. We still pay that money directly to the university or college. However, we will then pay allowances for books, food, private accommodation, transport, electronic and assistive devices directly to students, and in such a way that we can then put a level of control over that. So just to give you the example of how we manage that, book allowances are paid to students up front. Obviously, they need their books on day one. But meal allowances are paid in monthly tranches, 10 monthly tranches through the course of their study, so that they've got access to money every single month sufficient to get them through their course of study. And so is accommodation, and so is transport. So against those principles, and as highlighted through this diagram, our student is the center of this. And as the chairperson of the board said, we offer two products, a bursary product and a loan product. The bursary product obviously is a payment to the student where there's no repayment obligation, although in some cases we manage funds where there is a repayment obligation based on years of service after exiting the bursary program. And the loan program is a loan that gets converted. At present we convert 60-40, the loan gets converted into a portion of the loan gets converted into a bursary, providing the student passes satisfactorily. And currently there's a provision as well that in the final year of study, 100% of the loan gets converted into a bursary if the student passes successfully. The rate of interest is significantly lower than that that's commercially available. In fact, it represents 80% of the base rate. So it's a very low rate, and that rate of interest only kicks in 1 year after the student has exited their study. So with the student at the center, center of everything. What we've done is we've highlighted them in the second chevron, and you can see the interaction channels, and we want to make it as open as possible to students to make applications and to deal with this. And what we've done there is we've worked through a number of intermediated offices, being the financial aid offices and the student support offices at the campuses, where we work closely with those individuals to ensure that the information comes through to us in the format that we require it. Service delivery centres, regional offices, and we want to then expand this more significantly to organisations such as the post office, and obviously through the school system, through LO syllabus, and just to make the application forms and the knowledge of NSFAS available at those institutions, just to help us get applications in. And then obviously we'll go directly to the students where NSFAS can be approached directly through its website and through its contact centre. And the ways that we'd like to interact with students and are currently interacting with students is through mobile phones, through paper, through fax, through emails, through the regional offices, through our contact centre, through system integration. And system integration is where our systems talk to other systems such as the Department of Home Affairs, our banking systems, and our funds distribution systems. Self-service and internet, and then also outbound communications through our contact centre where we can get hold of students and we can contact our debtors to facilitate funds recovery. Mobile phone we're using quite extensively, not only to communicate to students, but also to pass their funds to them. So currently the funds are distributed through a mobile banking platform through the student cell phones. Just in terms of the last block as to, you know, what we anticipate the service fit being and the way it's working at the moment is the intermediary services is very light up, so really what they do is just assist in the application process and some general process support, some system support and some training, whereas NSFAS then runs the full ambit of services, you know, through communication marketing, assessing the applications, issuing the loans and bursaries, and then administering those loans through the life of the students until they become debtors going forward, and then obviously recovering those loans once they become payable. And the way that NSFAS has achieved all this in terms of the new model is by putting a technology platform back with processes and people, which effectively runs in the same way that you'd expect a financial institution to run. So there's a full range of services, and if I just run through these components just to give you an indication of what's there. At the center is this, what we call the interoperability layer, but that really is just a piece of technology that allows all of these different systems to talk to each other and exchange data between each other, and also allows us to interact with third parties. So, for example, we then pass information through this interoperability layer to our banks and to our funds distribution network on the cellular phones. The second component is the core system, which is the student loan and bursary system, and this is exactly what you'd expect a banking loan management system to be. It's got a full range of controls, calculates the interest, manages recoveries, manages the provision of statements to our students and debtors, and so it's a fully functional banking system. The third component is assists us in managing applications, and it's referred to as a business process management engine. And what that allows us to do is to put into work queues electronically a student's application. So when a student makes the application to us, it gets allocated to a member of our staff who then goes and assesses that, and then gets allocated to another member of staff electronically, who then would go through a quality assurance process on that, and then takes it to the fourth component, which is the content management, and any documents then that were attached to that application, as well as loan agreements and bursary agreements, are then held in a content management repository so that we can find all of this documentation and link it to the student. So it's very quick for us to then think of this like a big electronic filing system, is to retrieve information that students have sent through to us. The fifth component is a financial management general ledger, which obviously keeps our statutory reporting in place. The sixth component, probably the most important, is the data warehouse. And the data warehouse allows us to get information from the various systems that make up our NSFAS ecosystem and start analyzing that data and getting a much better understanding of what our interactions with students actually mean, and then to be able to analyze that data to observe trends, observe spending patterns, and also to pick up future trends that allow us to plan strategically for the future. The seventh component and the eighth component are the funds distribution systems, and there we use third parties to distribute funds to other banks, and we distribute funds to the students through their cell phone accounts, through their cell phone. Effectively, those two then are the payments directly to the universities and the payments directly to the students. The students also, we have set up relationships with some of the large retailers who provide us the ability to, for students to get cash out, in some cases, from the point of sale. So where we have students who have a requirement, for example, for travel allowances, they can then draw that out as cash from the point of sale at one of the retailers. The ninth component is our portal, which is really our website, which allows the students then to access NISFAS through our website and allows them to make applications online. And then the tenth component is the contact center, where we manage all interactions with the students through telephone, through email, and we also have a section within the contact center that manages social media. We get a lot of interaction with students over social media, especially Facebook. So what the way we've managed the rollout to the of this new model is to take a view that we should do a selection of universities and colleges and understand exactly how it might work in these different institutions. We've taken selection, geographic selection, also historic, from a historic perspective, a different group of universities and colleges. And we refer to that then as the pilot group. The pilot group, just to give you a sense of what we've distributed in 2014. Just in terms of numbers, you can see that the pilot universities, so the group making up the pilot universities, Durban University, NMU, Salt Lake, Mpumalanga, UNISA, and University of Venda, that group make up 1.17 billion of allocations, of which 1.020 billion has been utilized year to date. So that's what's been distributed to students or allocated to students for spend year to date. We've allocated that to 45,000 students at universities, with the largest numbers, you can see University of South Africa, 23,841 students. The next slide shows then the pilot TVET colleges. Also, the allocation, 221 million rand, of which 160 million has been allocated. Clearly, in the cases of the colleges, there's a second semester and second and third trimesters, and so some of that money is still being retained for those semesters and trimesters. And there, year to date, we've assisted 20,000 students. So the total between the two, roughly 65,500 students, which makes up about 15% of the 2013 total number. So around the pilots making up around about 15% of the total numbers. So really just to, you know, just in terms of the pilot, I hope that's given a background, and I'm going to hand back to our CEO now.
Thanks, Richard. I'm going to take the comment to just the 2014 process as to where we are in terms of payments, allocations and payments to various universities, the number of students that have already been confirmed funded. Also, I should remind the committee that these universities are not on the new model. They are still on the old model, which means it is the universities that select the students and they submit the forms to NSFAS. Therefore, some students might have already been assisted by the universities, but the forms have not yet been processed to NSFAS. Therefore, these are just the numbers. I'm not going to go through each one. But in terms of the total numbers, the allocation to the university is just more than 5 billion. We've already paid 2.7 billion to the universities for 61,000 students. This is the allocation that comes from the PhD funders in the main. There is some funders that don't necessarily have an allocation for the universities. They will have a pool of money. They select the students themselves. For instance, the Department of State Education, Funza Lushaga Pasari Scheme, the Department of Social Development, we also manage the social work specialists, Department of Agriculture, Military Veterans, Eastern Cape Province, KwaZulu-Natal Province, we we also manage bursaries for various sectors. We also manage bursaries for various projects of the National Skills Fund. On the colleges side, also we have dispersed the allocation to the colleges outlined, and the students that we have already received claim for, and the payments that have been made to the colleges. In total, to the colleges, we have made about 792 million rand worth of payments out of the total allocation for the year of 1.8 billion. There's a lot of effort to ensure that all payments are made and finalized before the end of the academic year. There is a system mismatch somewhat, because the financial year of government starts in April and ends in March, but the academic year of institutions starts in January and ends in December. Therefore, we have to try and squeeze ourselves in between that mismatch. As much as we start getting money in April, but we try as much as we can to pay everything by December, not through the financial year up to March of the following year. That's basically how we try and manage the system. And between January and March, we manage that system through recoveries. And Richard has already mentioned that one of the things that we think is important is to increase the pool of recoveries. And I will talk about that later in terms of the work that we're doing as an institution. On the next question that we're asked to answer in terms of the committee is on the readiness and where we are with the pilot and what are the findings. Just one of the things that the pilot has done for us, which is the 5 for 6 universities that are in the pilot and the 5 for 50 colleges. We now have the model that has distributed 1.2 billion in loans and bursaries to 65,000 students, 11 universities and colleges. And we have no paper, that's all electronic forms of science have been signed by students electronically. In the old model, all students sign paper forms, those forms get couriered, they get loaded everywhere in this country in a bike and shipped to Cape Town. But in the old model, where the students are, they go online, they sign the agreement form, and the agreement form is approved by NSFAS. And that's one of the good things that the new model has already delivered. And also, we're seeing now the visibility of spend. In the old model, we're giving the money to the universities, and the universities would therefore give it to the students. Therefore, at the NSFAS level, everything that we had was given to us by the university. The only information that we relied on was given to us by the university. And now history has told us that that varies in terms of quality. Some universities give good quality information, and some give information that is suspect. But now in the new model, we're able to go directly and then know where we've dispersed. And just as I was talking about retailers, we've signed a couple of retailers in the model where our students are able to go and buy at all the ShopRite stores, the spa stores around the pilot, booksellers, the Franskites, and the I think all the top 10 booksellers are signed up in the model. Therefore, there is enough merchants that students can go and buy. And we've dispersed physically cash gone up 398 million rand, including 130 million rand for student allowances. And for the first time, we're now able to pick up where students are not spending on the right items. And that's something that we're now going to go forward and design controls to be able to prevent that. ShopRite is able to give us at a detailed level that so-and-so came here and ordered 2 bottles of wine. So-and-so came here and ordered airtime. So-and-so came here and ordered this. And now we're going to the next level where now information is there. Before, we didn't even have information. It was all anecdotal evidence. But now there's evidence that's coming to the fore. We're now able to say that these are the issues that we have to deal with in terms of the development of our systems going forward. Speed of processing is one of the advantages we now 81% of students, they receive their allowances within 7 days of the due date of the allowance.
for book allowances is due at the beginning of the year. For food allowances are paid in tranches. They still, you know, the other 19% of still that did not receive the allowance on time. And there's various reasons that were said. One of the reasons that were said is we found that students are very good in changing their cell phone number. Because this system that we have distributes vouchers through cell phones. Therefore, if the cell phone number is changed, now it goes to the old cell phone number. And that's something that we're now looking at the redesign. So how can we assist students? Because they're not going to change their behavior anytime soon. How can we assist them to be able to receive their vouchers? We've also implemented new systems. Richard has already spoken about the new systems. And there's new processes for application, admission of returning students. I think this is probably the biggest benefit of the new system is the policy decision that we are going to let students only apply once in their career. Students, they're not going to come and apply every year. But every year, the only thing that will qualify them to continue to be funded is their academic results. That's the only thing. They're not going to come. And you know, for some students, there's been a massive disadvantage. You know, students come from Limpopo to study in Cape Town. And when they come here in Cape Town, they are told that, no, we need an affidavit from your grandmother or from your mother that they're unemployed. You know, just to go back to Limpopo and take the bus to just go and get that affidavit. And that has to happen every year. And this is one of the biggest inefficiencies of the system. Also because the system only allowed students to apply when they land up at the university. They could not apply when they are still outside of the university. It's only when they get admitted that they now start, you know, are presenting all the documentation for application for a loan. And this is now some of the systems that we're automating. We're beginning, I think, with the department, we're working hard in terms of encouraging students to apply in advance so that when they come to university, they've already been concerned, but also for financial aid. When they walk in at the beginning of the year for financial aid, they know whether they've been approved or not approved. And we think that's going to help a lot in terms of managing the unrest at the beginning of the year. Because students walk into a campus, they don't know what the situation is. But if they walk in there, they've already been a confirmed decision whether you're in or you're not in. Unfortunately, we're not able to fund all the students that would have loved to be funded. One of the findings is this student-centered model has got high dependency on actual students and institutional data. And this has been a serious challenge in some of the universities and colleges in the pilot. And I think having done the first year, 2014 was the first year of the pilot. There is lessons that we have learned both sides, ourselves and the university. But one of the things that we did not expect the level of data quality issues that we bumped into with the universities. You know, in November, we had agreed with the universities that these are the course codes and this is how the course codes are going to be done. And when it comes to January, 2 months later, more than half of the course codes have changed. And we thought that this is just couldn't happen. You know, how can course codes all of a sudden change in 2 months? But this is part of the learnings. I think we are working with universities that are in the pilot to improve that situation. One of the issues is alignment of data, where data or action is required. You know, the new system relies on precision of data, and it must be provided on that day. Because in the old system, we could manage along. For instance, if students come on campus, they could be given books without them signing contracts, or the investors would get them signed contracts knowing that these contracts are not going to be sent to NSFAS. They will be shredded later. It's just to manage the situation in the interim. But in this new system, for the students to get their first allowances, they must sign their contracts. Therefore, the information must all come in so that the students get their contract and sign their contract. And we're being beaten up also in Midland by the credit regulator, because we're a credit provider. If you're providing credit, you need to have all the prerequisites of providing credit in place. You cannot just provide credit without proper forms and proper things. And therefore, we as an institution, the new system is helping us to comply fully with the National Credit Act. And we have to adjust processes for colleges. That's one of the findings that we design design the system with the presumption that students at colleges will also apply in advance, and therefore we can approve them in advance. But what we found was less than probably 1% of students in colleges apply in advance. They only go in January, they go to a university, and when they can't find a university, that's the only time they walk into a TVET college. You know, TVET colleges, unfortunately, are still not the institution of choice for students. And that has affected how we had to redesign our process. And I think in the interim, we're going to make some tweaks in our system to enable the walk-in at colleges and late registration so that they are not necessarily disadvantaged because they have not applied on time, because a big majority of students at TVET colleges are still not applying on time, which is the opposite at universities. The opposite at universities, most of the students have applied by end of October. Just on the readiness to move forward, before I conclude, I think one of the things that we're working on for us to roll out the student standard model is, let's first need to have full operational capacity, and that's something that we're working on, that we realize that within NSFAS we need people in all the critical places so that we can sustain this model and roll it forward. I think there's no doubt that the model is the best place to be in, but there are things that need to be put in place. We also need representatives of NSFAS as an institution, because with the passing of information between us and the institution, we need someone from NSFAS on campus that's going to be able to validate the information when it comes to head office, who already been vetted and validated, so that we don't have a budget for the institution. And the institution needs to provide the quality of data. We need to also integrate to the system of the institution, and there need to be enhancements on both our side and the institution side. And we need to also have relevant policies in place. And there's a few things that some students are saying, this pilot is disadvantaging us. But when we go and dig into what is it about, it's actually about us enforcing policy. Because the system, the way it was managed before, it was managed by various universities. Therefore, policies, each university will interpret the policy in a different way. But now, because it's become more and more centralized, we're beginning to enforce policies. And now students are interpreting that as part of the new system, but it's just us enforcing the rules that we should have enforced in the first place before. And just basically some of the lessons from the pilot. the last part it's about what we're doing to ensure that the allocations and the demand, we try and do something about the increase in demand. We're trying to use funding more efficiently, and we think that part of it is about this new system, so that we can know exactly what we're paying for and stop paying for things that we should not be paying for in terms of allowances, and just know that we are going to pay for books, travel, food, accommodation, and assistive devices for students with disabilities. And we're also working on improving collections. We're working on a campaign to improve collections on student loans, because that's the first point of fundraising. We need to fundraise from people that we assisted to study before. Those are the people that should help us in fundraising before we go even outside and look for more money. Increased funding from government. When we say government, we mean the broader government institution. And yes, some of it is actually money that is already used for financial aid. But we think that there is a benefit in consolidating student financial aid in one place, where it's going to help government to see that here we are duplicating, here there's double dipping. Right now there's too many pockets and we don't even know who's double dipping and who's duplicating. And we're working on a project to try and consolidate, at least have a view of who is funding who for study purposes. And fundraising from private sector funders, so that we can also bring in more money. We're speaking to a few foundations already in terms of the possibilities of them providing funding for students. And because now we've got the system, I think before we didn't have the credibility, because we were going to take the money and give it to the universities anyway. And some of the private sector funders were saying, why don't we just give it to the university anyway? Well, we are just a bold box. But now I think we've got we're building much more robust systems, and the skepticism of the private sector, we can be able to see that.
Chairperson, we are going to hand over to you this presentation. I think in conclusion, we know the history of NSFAS, and I can assure you we know what we're doing today, and we are developing confidence on a daily basis that this system is working. And we know where we're going to. The pilot, in terms of your question, where we are in rolling over to the rest of the students, the pilot is still underway, and as the board, we're playing an oversight to make sure that we hit the right direction before we roll over to all the institutions. So far, we are at the universities that we've outlined, that we've mentioned, and the colleges that we've mentioned. But above that, I think taking this organization when it was having a disclaimer, and I can assure you how we account financially today, we have unqualified audit opinion even in this financial year. Since that disclaimer, we're moving. We are not satisfied. We want to move to a clean audit, because we're talking about the future of our country. And that future will achieve it with the support of big institutions like the Parliament. Thank you very much, Sir President.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Board, and all the staff members, the CEO, for the presentation. And Mark, is this Mark?
Richard.
And Richard, for the presentations that you've given on behalf of NSFAS. we are happy to note that you are actually transforming the institution. And you have set in a mechanism to ensure that the fund fetches value for money, because this is what we want to see as government. If we fund an entity, the money should go and fetch, we should invest for value. I'm going to hand over to the members to ask the questions that they noted as well in the presentation. But one question that I wanted to ask from you. You say you take the funds and you give to the university to give to service students after they've made submissions of the necessary documents. At university, do you have any staff working there to actually administer the fund, or it is staff of the universities that are actually employed by those institutions and they've got nothing to do with any staff? Is it your staff or university staff? It's not
There are financial aid officers at the universities, which are the university staff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but what we are proposing in terms of this transformation is to have NSFAS staff in each and every university in terms of the transformation. Yeah, this is what the system is proposing. In fact, has identified to do.
Let me hand it over to you for questions. Okay, let me start this way. Honorable Mkuku, Honorable Sok, Kaula, we go down. All the members that wish to ask questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some gather a presentation where it's so comfortable and it's fast. When I've finally taken it to so far, that's
what.
Now, my question is on the top up student. There are those students who drop out from school at the first semester. Once you are in school, you are studying for some making money. After the mixing, how do you recover those funds?
Mm-hmm.
In your presentation again, you have mentioned in the ethics, who funds as they are schooling, universities or colleges straight, and there are those funds as they are for students. You are young, get the new drop out. The man to an high school, the Nabane, Bakule, Bayek, the next student. The Montar Saganja, the Lord. The Kumananja, the man, the boy, and the back. Because by Abani Babo, Yaka Totan, and a bit of the school, how do you monitor the side of the Lord on the course of the
Thanks,
Chairperson.
I think on the first question I was actually covered by Honorable Nkuku in regard to the state of dropouts at the different institutions of higher learning. But now I want to take it a little bit further, the issue that was raised by Honorable Nkuku. You will find in certain instances, you will find a situation where a student has applied for NASFAS and maybe studied for a program of 4 years, but only managed to participate in the 3 years and can't finish. And ultimately the student drops out. And now in that case, there's a loan agreement that was signed that the student was nice to us, which in actual fact, the CEO has indicated that is part of the fundraising mechanisms. In fact, the first doorway, as far as we want to go out and implement the scholarship. Now, that student was supposed to go and sit at home because he or she could not finish the studies. Will ultimately end up in the labor market somewhere, find employment somewhere, and as far as will end the doorstep of that student. And then what happens to such cases? Now, the second issue which I also wanted to raise is the issue around you see the good presentation about the integration of the student-centered model of NASFAS, because now the system is going to pick up on the issue of fraudulent applications like the CEO has indicated in his presentation. But I did not actually hear the part where the student was also going to capture, because students are also making applications in their different respective provinces. Mm. For an example, someone who comes from Limpopo might have received a bursary from the Premier's office. Now, is this new model also going to pick up on those issues? Because if it's not going to pick up, then it means that we're going to end up with one student having access to two bursaries. It's one bursary from the Premier's office and also NASFAS, which one bursary could have actually been allocated to one other student for a particular field and so on. So I just wanted to find out if the system is going to pick up on those issues. Or you punch in just the number of a student, they don't pick up already. No, you have been allocated a bursary in Kimberley. You can't again allocate to NASFAS. Something like that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. Some of my questions are related to what has already been asked. The issue of the raising of funds, I heard the CEO saying that their first goal is the students who are already with the environment sector. I want to look at that as your recovery rate. And I would like to know what is your recovery rate, because those are people who are owing you. For me, it's not fundraising. It's money that belongs to you, which must come back to you. How much are you able to get back from what is owed to you? The other issue, Chairperson, they did explain it, but I did not get clarity on it, on the slide that talks to loans and bursaries. So I would like to know what kind of students get loans, what kind of students get bursaries, what is it that you refer to as a loan, and what is it that you refer to as a bursary. This issue of loans and bursaries. How does one qualify both for a bursary, and how does one qualify for a loan? Which one is a loan, which one is a bursary? What are the dividing lines between the two? And then the Chairperson, the issue of the credibility of the information given, you seem to be relying on SARS. There are people who are self-employed. Let me make an example, the taxi industry in this country, which is a very big industry. But I'm not sure if those people are linked to that. Yet they do have children who are maybe benefiting from you, and some of them who may not necessarily be deserving students because they may be making a lot of money, which is not regulated. I'm just making an example of that industry. There are many other industries like that in the country. So I just want to know, do you check the kind of information that gets to you so that you approve? And lastly, Chairperson, the link between NSFAS at your level, CEO, and the institution in terms of the approval. Where does the approval take place? Is it at your level nationally, or is it at the level of the institution, or is both? I would like to get directives to what processes are there which will lead to a decision being taken. And if it is at your level, how do you check with the relevant institutions before you take that decision to either grant or not grant? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to say at the beginning of this year, there's been so much pressure, specifically to name an MAU in Port Elizabeth. And some of the people had not received their book allowances to as late as March. And for me, you are compromising a tool that a learner or a student needs to utilize in order to achieve a good and excellent academic result. Why were those protests? And on your presentation, you were touching minimally on the protests that were evident, and specifically knowing of certain students who have been affected to an extent. Some of the families needed to go and do cash loans in order to help with and exposing themselves to so much abuse with the financial cash loans because of the allowances, which also had to compromise the traveling allowances that you give, which are no for enemy reaching 600 per student per month. I want to know about those protests. That's the first thing. Secondly, in extension to what Honorable Stokes has said earlier on, how do you recover your loans from those who, and I know of a few at UCT, after completion of their honors, they go overseas. How do you recover those loans to those who go and do masters and their PhDs overseas? On your main test that you're doing in institutions, I want to know, specifically at UCT, which is highly, I'll use the term, highly filled with so-called white communities. It's been perceived that NSFAS only goes to the black students mostly, and minimal on the white students. And I know for a fact that amongst the white students, there are poor white students who are in desperate situation or disadvantaged situations in the so-called UCT. I'd like to know your main step. How does it reach out in terms of constitutionalizing it and bringing equality into effect? Okay. I wanted for the last one. Does your funding include the use of laptops and as part of your fund? Is that accommodated in your funding? That's the last one. I thank you very much.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I know Honorable Kaula is here out of order even before I speak. But thank you for the opportunity to be in the committee. Chairperson, I think I have an interest in NSFAS because I've been working with students for almost 15 years now. Being myself a benefactor of, it was not even SEFSA that time, I think you would recall it was Kagiso Trust in the 90s. So I have a few students that I sent all over from my constituency on a yearly basis of 15 years now, and I'm working closely with the university.
trouble. But I think MISFAS is a very, very good tool to develop our people in this country and also our economy. So from this, I just want to ask a few questions. Chairperson, Richard, I didn't get your surname, but you said that students apply once. I think it's a very, very good thing. But now, what about students that didn't get MISFAS this year or last year? Which means they will, I know for instance, at UJ, if you look at page 13, UJ only received 100 and, I don't know, 300 and page 13, if I can just quickly get it, 711 students at UJ, an institution bigger than Northwest University, 711 bursaries. I know for a fact that no second, third, or fourth year students this year got MISFAS at UJ. No one got it. They only gave to first year students. I inquired that, I still didn't get an answer, so I think upon further deliberation, CEO, we can just check that out, whether it is true or not. What about these other students? Secondly, I want to know, seeing that we're only applying for the first year, right, and then we get the bursary for 3 years or 4 years, depending on their program. What will be the frequency of verification of the financial status of the student and their family? Because my child might receive MISFAS year one. I might get a top job or a job anywhere. My status might have changed. Are we verifying it on an annual basis? I know you said that the only thing that you're coming back to check on, CEO, is that whether that student deserves it academically. But I think we also need to look at the financial status of that family, because it is of utmost importance so that we can help other destitute students once their family can afford to pay. Thirdly, Chairperson, are students from certain schools excluded from eligibility for MISFAS? I had a few instances where people told me that if you're coming from an ex-Model C school, we're not even looking at those applications. But I had two students. They got bursaries into these ex-Model C schools because they play cricket. But those parents cannot afford. And because these learners, you know, they're already disadvantaged. But because they're coming from Monument High, they cannot get bursaries, but they are disadvantaged. Their parents cannot afford to pay. They are there. They from grade 8, they got a bursary at that school, you know. With some of these schools, the programs of these schools where they help previously disadvantaged people, but when they go further, they cannot get the bursary. So I just think we need to iron out that one. I think it's still a rumor, or it gets practiced in certain universities. It's good that we now have the student center model so that we look at the parents' circumstances and not what the university perceives it to be. And then if completed in time, they say that, let's say a student historically and academically completes three in three or four in four. What I understood was from the Minister of Higher Education, the Honorable Bladen Zivande, is that if you complete your studies in time, in 3 years, if you study, let's say, a BA or something, you complete it in 3 years, you don't pay a cent back. But what I heard from the presentation today was, I just want to ascertain whether I have the facts right, is that only the last year, your final year, will be 100% bursary. So you still have to pay back the loan percentage, the loan part of the other MISFAS year. I just want clarity on that one. Another question is, what's the impact of Funza Lushaka on MISFAS? Because Funza Lushaka is basically for students studying in for a PF or education or teacher's qualification. Now, some of these students, if they cannot be supplied with bursaries by Funza Lushaka, they also apply for NSFAS. Now, I think we need to look at that as a committee or as NCLP or anybody to ask the Minister of Higher Education to put more money into Funza Lushaka so that they can supply their own students, and then NSFAS can help other students, because there are more programs that NSFAS must worry about. Education has its own bursary. So if more money can be put into Funza Lushaka, NSFAS can breathe easily in terms of the high volume of students asking for it. And then lastly, I just want to commend you. You can see that you are on the ball. You know exactly. You have all the practicals. What is going on in the field? I think you're on the right track, and I would advise you from this committee, please don't stop asking for more money. We need more money. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Me and Julius always go that way. I want to start there where you said, my greetings to the team, and especially to the chairperson of the board. We really appreciate for your presence. The last part that he has just said, that you know practically what you have to do today. I don't want to agree with him there, because that is where I want to start. If you look at the presentation and listen to what is being said here, sounds good, very good, but it's not the case down there. There are serious problems. We appreciate the fund. I'm a beneficiary, but I also did pay my law, completed 3 years ago. In fact, I've just learned that I was one of the first beneficiaries, because I first got it in 1991. So, there are serious problems out there. Serious problems, I must say. Some of the problems that are there are that, let me start from the expectation from us as politicians, the impact of the funding. Where are the students? When you say we have funded so many people, have they completed? Are they working? Or they got funding, did not finish, and stayed at home? And we come here and present that we have funded so many people, which did not bring the results that we want. For me, the impact is more important than the number of people that have given money. Where are they? Are we able to track them and check if the intended impact is being realized? I think there's one area that you may want to go to and see, do some research of the impact analysis of the contribution to this, so that we know that when we put more money, this money is put into a good use. It doesn't help just to have numbers, but we don't know where are the students. I'm saying this because some of them, they are, with the model that we are out phasing now, they will get a loan this year, next year they don't get, then they're out. I mean, it's the other side of what other colleagues have raised, that they drop out because of some other reason. In most cases that I know, I'm from the municipality, they will come and say, we don't have money to go back to school because this year we didn't get NSFA. Meaning that the previous year they got it, this year they did not get it. There are so many. Where I am coming from in Bombela, we ended up opening a Mayoral Bazaar Fund just to support those students, because now they are left hanging, some of them from different municipalities. They're at home. How can we trace those? I'm more interested to those who are out now, because they could not be funded moving forward. The second matter is the issue of loan and the bursary and the passing. I'm not clear there also. How does it work? Most of them, when they come, they are told that we were promised that if I pass, this loan will become a bursary, so I don't have to pay. But now it's not happening. On the TVET colleges, when they recruited or applied to go there, they are told that immediately when you go there, you get the loan. But they get there, they don't get a loan. Now it's a problem. They don't know how to proceed. The other matter is the do you send the information? I did not get that from you. Because all the sponsors for me, as I heard, I might have missed because I was, you know, women do so many things at one time. I was also eating while you were presenting. I might have missed that well. I only heard government departments. Do we get the, this question came early. Do you fundraise outside government? Or when we talk about this funding, it's only government funds. The means test as well, I also want to hear more about the means test. Where are you focusing on the means test? The issue of the means test and the passing, all these other things, you know, for me, from the experience that I have, some students don't fail because they're not serious about their studies. They fail because of the social economic status at home in the family. Find that the child does have a loan, but she is or he is heading a family because parents pass on. Busy with the studies at the same time being a parent. So to say because you failed, I'm not encouraging that people must fail, but do we look at those cases so that when we say we withdraw our loan or our bursary, we know what is the status of that child. Finally, I want to agree with my colleague, Pambo Spokwane. We seem to be focusing, I fully agree 120% that the previously disadvantaged students. But the trend, you must also look at the trend. If you go to Mbombela, for example, most of the people who are staying on the street are white people. I don't know where they are coming from, because some of them are not from Mbombela. You just see them the following day on the street. But most of them who are on the street are white people. Let's take note of that. To say, as much as we look at them, we should, let's balance. We should not lose that are supposed to be at school. In our mayor's bursary fund, we had some white students because they dropped off because parents could not afford, so we had to take them up. So I'm just saying, as much as we have to do that because of valid reasons, but we should not reverse. Because as I'm saying, the majority now in our area, all people who are on the streets are white people, so we must balance. Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Those are my inputs. Oh, finally, the last one. I don't see colleges. How many colleges are you funding in Mpumalanga? I only see three on the TVET, except the Mpumalanga University with very few number of students. How many are we funding? I only see Hanzeni Ngangala and the Fransebande. But we have so many of them. I don't know whether those are considered as satellites under the regions, because those that I mentioned there are from the region. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. I think the most important questions have already been asked, but thank you for the presentation. I think that was quite a good presentation, and but it was also learningful to hear what is going on. And I'm very happy to hear that the transformation is taking place all over. I think it is very necessary in our country at this stage. And the IT model you have here in front of us, I think if it's implemented in all the institutions and it will be workable and we will get the information, as you said, very quickly. So what I want to know, with the implementation, is it already in all the institutions at this stage? Or if you can give us an indication. And then, will the passing rate of students in the different years also be immediately available at the end of the academic year? So if you can give us there also an indication. And what I also want to know is, and the previous member also asked this question, or she touched on it, I'll just ask more questions about it, and that is about the training of students. Are we in contact with the economy of our country, the needs we have outside? I think that is very important, to train people in our institutions, and at the end of the day, when they get outside, there's no jobs. We must look into that. How far are we with this? What is the connections between outside and our institutions? That is very important, and I think that is why lots of our people, our children, after finishing universities, they haven't got jobs, and they can't get jobs because the qualifications are not allowed them to get any jobs. So if you can help us with that. The other thing you mentioned in your presentation is fraud. What I want to know there, because that is also a very important factor in the whole economy and in all our departments, where is it taking place? Is it at the students, or is it at the officials in the offices? And what measures do you have in place to see that we can reduce these frauds taking place in our institutions? And then our poorest of poor students. You mentioned now when they get allowances for books, travel, food, and accommodation, and all that things. But what about clothes? If they get into an institution, many of them get there with what they have on them. So how are you help these students to get into the stream at universities and in institutions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's a step in the right direction that we are trying to stop outsourcing key government functions, and that universities are no longer going to be responsible for the administration of the fund. And it's important that we start building state capacity, so I just wanted to acknowledge that. Question one. How many students do we have who apply, who are eligible, who have made the qualifications, who have passed well enough to enter into university, who have applied for the loan and are declined because of various reasons, insufficient funds, etc. And I think that will give us a bigger picture of how many students are actually falling by the wayside, and that we aren't educating who actually qualify for to enter into tertiary institutions. And number two, the cost of this IT model. I'd like to know that, and who's been responsible has it been outsourced to some to implement, or who's got the tender to implement that IT model? Number two, rural students. I've worked in the rural area for a very, very long time, and probably the most challenged students that you have. One, they don't have access to communication. So even though they might have phones, responding to SMSs is the most difficult thing that you can, because they don't have airtime, and that is the reality. Number two, postage, sending forms, them accessing forms. They can't just go and print. Sometimes there's no internet. I mean, it's just a horrible process, and so many of them fall by the wayside. So what are we doing? Are we going to high schools, or sending representatives to high schools, or have days in each region around the country where they can come and apply, because that process alone disadvantages so many of our rural students. So what are we doing about that? Registration fees is a huge thing, because that's a stepping stone for them to get into university. So does this fund make registration fees available, and my understanding is that it doesn't. So what are we doing so that students, even before they can apply for bursaries, they need to send through these registration fees, and there's some other fees, and they don't have money to do that. So there's another thing where we stop the students from getting in. What are we doing for that? And then the repayments, when do the repayments start? And are students blacklisted before that, or are their parents blacklisted? And this becomes a bigger problem later on, because as soon as students, and many of our disadvantaged students, they finish their degree, they just start working, and then, you know, they become the primary breadwinner at home. So we must also look, and I understand that we need to get our money back, so to speak, but we must also look at the social conditions that they're coming from, because they got to support their whole families at home, then they become the breadwinner, and then they have this ridiculous loan that they need to pay back. So we need to look at these things like that. I mean, ultimately, I think tertiary education should be free, but within the boundaries of what we're talking, we should look at those conditions as well. What was my next question, the loans? The categories on how you award your loans, and that question will be answered as well, because I'm covered, the difference between the bursaries and loans, are the bursaries not repayable, etc. The categories, do you take into consideration what degree or what certificate they are taking up, or what they apply for at university? And that will also give us an idea of whether we have students who are entering fields that are not necessarily high employment available for them. So is that also taken into consideration? And I think I've covered about the high school, the registration fees.
Honorable Martin, I'm going to limit you to the last question now so that they can respond, and we're out of here because some of us have got provincial meetings.
Thank you. I think I'm covered. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much, member, for your questions. They are going to throw a lot of light. Let me give guidance as to how the fund is going to respond. I would appreciate that you respond very succinctly, because we need to be out of this chamber at 12 o'clock for another meeting. If you could just finish at 5 to 12, so that we wrap up, then we close the meeting and raise off to our provincial meeting. Thank you. You'll divide yourselves. I don't know, Chairperson. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I think in responding, the Department of Higher Education and Training is also going to participate in responding to some of the questions. But having said so, quickly, I'm not going to take the questions by order, and we have already divided the questions. We know exactly which question is going to who. So the questions are not going to be answered by order of the members. But even myself, I'm going to be so selective in terms of which question I answer. Usually I take the easiest question, and then the difficult are left with management. I will take a bow to the members in terms of commending that the system is good and it is in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we also think. And with that support, I think if this stakeholder, the parliament, support us in driving this system, it's going to be helpful for NESPA. It's going to be helpful for this country. It's also going to be helpful for the economy of this country. In terms of the question which was asking whether we are funding the laptops, we are not, because the funding for NESPA is focused on five items, which is books, accommodation, tuition, food, and transport. But however, the Minister of Higher Education and Training highlighted this issue and saying that the students do need, in fact, by the way, they use laptops and they end up in the trying to pay a lot of money because they want to access the technology. So there is a strategy that we're still developing, but we also want the institutions to come forward in terms of their readiness in checking whether the book allowance can be so divided and look at funding the laptop, because it's technology today. Maybe we can talk e-books, whatever, in that category. So, but as things stand, we're not funding that particular thing. The cost for the transformation model, in particular IT model of NSPA. Yes, Kitenda was out, and Deloitte was successful and was awarded that particular tender, and therefore the IT is being installed by Deloitte at NSPA, and the cost is at 98 million rand, and that source of funding is not part of these allocations of loans and bursaries. It's a special allocation from the Department of Higher Education and Training, because this transformation we discuss as part of implementing the ministerial review report with the minister, and therefore we ask the minister identify a source of funding, and therefore we agree as NSFAS. I agree with Honorable Member Shami. There are serious problems on the ground. We are not trying to paint a better picture out here, but we are saying that we see these things, and therefore we start looking at these things. If we're not confined only in funding, because we also want to look at this issue that we were talking about, the impact of this funding, the value for money, in the manner in which we do. That is why, in most cases, in fact, in all cases, for the student to be continued funded, and that student must succeed academically. But now, what do they do after they have passed with this money of NSFAS? That's a big question. So that is an issue. I'm not going to talk about which part of the money is converted into bursary and loans. I think the executive office and other officials will be able to deal with that. Your other question, that do you fundraise or not? I think that one is those who played rugby. Kind of an up and under, and therefore we need to catch it. It is very clear that the money that we disperse is not only the money that is allocated by Treasury or by the allocation from the DHT of NSFAS, but most of the money, I agree with you, is coming from the circles of government, because part of this money that we disperse is CETA funding, because CETA are also, because we also lobbied them to work with us in order to maximize the money that we have. But in terms of funding, in particular in the private sector, I think our focus was to make sure, especially in the fourth parliament, to make sure that NSFAS becomes a very balanced entity, and therefore the board is busy with a very clear funding strategy, and then we'll be able to engage with you with that. But it doesn't mean that there are no funders, but I'm not mentioning, because that is a very, very little money that is coming from the fundraising at this point in time. But as the board, we realize it is our function to fundraise, and therefore we cannot hide away from it. All these functions that are enshrined in the Act, we must deliver all of them. This issue of, I think two members emphasized on the issue of white students. You know, we're funding the poorest of the poor, and the poorest of the poor has got no color. And that is why we think that in terms of the transformation model, where we say money follows students, whether a student is black or white, if that student is poor, will be a deserving student in terms of NSFAS. And
already out there. There is no university, public university, that has got, hasn't got NSFA students. Whether it is the well-balanced university, UCT, up to all the public universities, we do that. It's just that I cannot give specifically to date, as I'm speaking right now, how many white, black, colored students are being funded in that particular. But what I know is that the bottom line is we're funding the poorest of the poor, and we are not looking for, as long as the criteria, all the students are meeting, then the funding is getting into that direction. Okay. Isula.
Thank you. Let me also deal with collections and the rules for around collections of loans, and maybe we started at differentiating between loans and bursaries. NSFA gets money from various funders. Most of them are, as the chairperson of the board has said, they are state institutions. But each of the funders, they have got their own little rules in them. For instance, the National Skills Fund would have a fund that they give us, and they say this one is for SCET skills. If you are looking for SCET skills, to develop SCET skills in the country, this is the money that you must use for SCET skills, and that money is only going to be better because we want to encourage young people to take up these specific professions. And then there's the big money that comes from the THUT, which is the traditional NSFAS money, and that is loans. We call it loans. But let me explain how that loan looks like. When the students are still studying, those loans carry no interest. They have 0% interest until 1 year after they exit the system. And that 1 year is to enable them at least to have 12 months to find a job. And after the one year, after they exit, the interest rate currently, I don't have a calculator, but the Reserve Bank governor has now changed the way they calculate the repo rate, is that 80% of the repo rate, that's about 4.something%, that's the interest rate that we charge to loanees. But during the course of their studies also, if you pass all your courses, 40% of the loan is converted to a bursary. There is no discussion about it. If you pass all your courses, 40%. If you pass part of your courses, of course, we will convert proportional, you know, from 0 to 40%. Depending on the number of courses that pass, which means students that go through the system and they pass, they will only at the end of it, they will be paying 60%. But that's not all, because now there's from 2011 we introduced a new product, which is the final year product. Those students that are doing the final year, if they pass and qualify to graduate during the final year, the whole loan is converted to a better if they pass and qualify. Therefore, you know, you find that students. If a student during the course of their studies, they have gotten 200,000 rand from NSFA, then when they come out of the system on the other end, they come up with a loan of about 60,000 rand. But the actual money that they got from NSFA is 200,000. And that amount that is a loan is also charged interest at 4.something%. And that's basically the structure of this. But also when they start repaying, the repayment is not based on the amount of loan that you actually borrow. It's based on your salary. How much do you earn? The smaller your salary that it ends, the smaller the percentage of repayment. If that's at 3%, it ends at 8%. You know, those that earn more, they pay a higher percentage, of course, until you repay your loan. You know, which means if you earn less, you will unfortunately take longer to pay your loan. But in terms of the repayment, it's modeled that students are able to ease through the work life because the repayments are structured in that way. And that's basically how the loans, bursaries, and collections are interlinked, and we don't have any dealings with any of the credit bureaus. That's for the record. We have got no dealings. I don't even have their contact number because we don't send any details to any of the credit bureaus around the students that owe us loans. The chairperson has touched on the, you know, the for students to qualify, there is a means test, which means everyone can apply. There is no automatic exclusion. Whether you came from a emergency school or from another school, there is no automatic exclusion in the system. Everyone comes through the ministers, and the ministers look at the economic circumstances of the family. You know, how much they earn, what are the responsibilities, and they ask you a whole lot of questions, and then it comes out with a result. Of course, we don't fund everyone that would have loved to fund in terms of the result of the ministers, because there's only so much available, and the demand is much bigger than that. There was also a question around dropouts and how we monitor the issue of dropouts. That information is held by the institutions themselves, and we rely on the institutions to assist us and provide us with that information in terms of students that are dropping out. But I should say also, in terms of the new model, what we're seeing, because we're now dealing directly with students, and we find that some students are not signing their agreement forms. You know, we're wondering, why are the students not signing their agreement forms? Well, it means they are not getting their allowances. And we now are finding that some of them have actually dropped out. That's why they are not even signing their agreement forms. And we're now beginning to see some of the things that we're not seeing in the old model, because we now have a direct interaction with them rather than going through the institutions. And we're going to go back to the universities to try and strengthen that system. The passing of students, this is a much broader question, and you know, we call ourselves the special group with the university, because the universities have a much bigger role in terms of ensuring that students pass. Of course, we have to do what we can do in ensuring that we assist in that process of making sure that students are in class, they are studying, they have got books, those that need food, they have got food, and those, you know, they are properly supported so they can go through the system. But just because of the sheer size, at universities, there is about just less than 1 million students in the country per year, students that are studying, and 300,000 of them are UNISA students. That means full-time students probably in the region of 600,000 to 700,000, and NSFAS funds about 200,000 of those. Because of the sheer size of NSFAS compared to the total system, whatever the result of NSFAS students is almost will resemble what the total system is. That's why we have to work with the universities. Because in some universities, we find 70% of the students in some universities. And there is no university in this country where we find less than 10% of the student population. Even the affluent universities, there is no university where NSFAS funds less than 10% of the full-time student population. And that's how significant we are. And therefore, we resemble everything that is happening in the system will happen at NSFAS just because of the correlation of the numbers. Rural students and how the system works with rural students. What you said in the new system is we want to work with as many channels as possible so that we can link up with all the students in all the corners of the country. But we understand that some corners of the country are not connected in terms of internet connectivity. And therefore there is still room in the system for students to apply using paper. We're working with various players. We're talking to the post office, see what can we do together with the post office in terms of connecting the whole country and making sure that students, because it helps, you know, as much as they can apply with paper, but the delivery of that post box might take 2 weeks. But the student that has applied online, their form is there within 2 seconds, and then we can be able to see their form. Therefore, they still is that sort of disadvantage, but it's not worse than they were, you know, before it was just going worse. They can only apply when they come to university. There was a specific question about UJ. I just wanted to deal with specifically to UJ. We have a program in place that all their money will be paid in September. We have agreed with UJ that all their money is paid in September. The reason that there appear to be few students, we find more than 10,000 students at UJ. And because UJ also have finally a funding, I can say without even investigating the allegation, because it's finally funding, it means that there is no way that they can only fund first-year students, because there's funding that is designated for final-year students. Therefore, in the value chain, all students get funded, and we fund more than 10,000 students per year as students. And that's the specific question about UJ. There was a question also about students might fail because of other circumstances that are not seen. And this is also something that we have to work with the sector. We're trying to set up a meeting with SASA. And part of the reason we're meeting with SASA is for us to share information, but also for us to say to them, look, our role starts here and ends here, but we don't want to just walk away. We want to take a telephone call and say, we've found a case that you, SASA, must pick up from here, because this is your role from now on. And we as NESPAS, because we've got this money like ends here, but we're not just going to walk away because it's going to affect our own investment in the students. But SASA, we must take this case because we're seeing that this child, in as much as got all the allowances that we can possibly give under the NESPAS system, but there are other needs that may have to be provided for through the social security system. I would also give the chance to just deal with some of the questions on the rate of recovery. We currently collect from former students, I think it's about 280 million rand per annum, the amount of money that is collected. We admit that we're not collecting as much as we want to. We think that the right collection rate would probably be at about 500 million rand a year. That's why we want to put more energy into this space of collection and ensure that we are able to push. In fact, we've got some of our colleagues today in KZN addressing the provincial cabinet in KZN about how to work together with KZN province to link up with state employees who own NESPAS in that province, and we want to roll out that program throughout the other provinces.
Chairperson, we are left with a couple of minutes.
Okay.
I hope Richard will just answer those very, very critical questions.
Okay.
Chair, I'll quickly touch on some of the technology questions. The technology isn't rolled out to the university. The technology is all in place at NESPAS. And the only interaction we have with the universities who are in the pilot is remittance advisors to them. They have access to the systems by connecting through the internet to NISFAS system. So it's available to everybody, just remembering that we have just those 12 pilot institutions in place right now. The other question was around students who can't apply, who the perception is students can only apply in their first year and then they get rolled over. Student can apply in any year of study. So if they didn't get NISFAS funding for whatever reason in their first year, they can still apply in their second year, and they can still apply in their third year. If they're then granted NISFAS funding there, they will roll over as a returning student. So they can apply at any stage.
Obviously, we have not finished answering the question.
No, normally when we are experiencing time constraints, we do request the entity to actually answer the question and direct the answers to the coordinator of the committee, secretary of the committee, so that those questions that were not adequately answered, we can then be able to answer them in writing. But I did give Richard some time to touch on the very important one, which I think he did. The department has not responded, regrettably. You want you to respond to one or two?
I was going to respond to the one question that the member asked in terms of the NESPAS is funding the right programs in terms of the economy. With your permission, I think we will then put it also in writing the response in terms of what the department is doing in terms of the enrollment planning process with university and how we create the system in terms of the economic needs of the country.
Thank you. We'll then give the secretary will give you his address so that you can then direct some of the answers to the committee for this. But thank you very much for the presentation. I'm looking forward to a day when the NESPAS staff will be attached to universities, because I think they will then be able to perform in terms of the act and also in the best interest of the fund. And by so doing, I want to believe that we resolve a lot of problems that students are experiencing, because we sit with situations where students have to wait because their applications have not been confirmed, they're still staying at home,
or if they are in the university, they have not received funds, because I realize that it's as if the university is doing their own thing. There is no proper integration. And I'm also looking forward to a day where there is going to be integration of the bursary scheme, all of them, whether it is from private or government, but there has to be integration. There are foundations that are sponsoring students, or Ford Foundation, or Anglo-American, or DBA. All those funds need to be integrated so that we know there are students at university who get a bursary to the extent that they are able to buy cars, when other students are not able to get assistance at all. So the integration is going to eliminate all those tendencies so that the really deserving students are the ones that end up getting assistance, or everybody that is requiring to be assisted will get an opportunity to be assisted. So it's a quality issue, sort of, but I'm looking forward to a day. I'm looking forward to a day where provinces, I saw here that you made mention of KZN, and which other one? It's engaged. Where are the other provinces? Because I should think they should be coming on board. Maybe the minister will have to look into that as well, so that we are going to eliminate the problem of the double parking, as we normally say in our own language, students benefiting from the left and also from the right hand, which is grossly unfair for us. So with those few words, I do want to say that thank you very much for the presentations that were good. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry that you could not answer everything that was asked, but we are giving you permission to respond again in writing. The presentation was an eye-opener. We are public reps. We get questions. We get inundated with requests. You know, parents come to us crying and so on, asking questions about this NSS, and now I think after this presentation, we'll be able to adequately address some of the issues and make the necessary referrals. Thank you very, very much. The meeting is adjourned. Members, just a minute. Let us not give for just a minute so that you get announcements regarding our children's on Thursday to Thursday.